Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning. This is NPR News. I'm Chris Farrell, in for Carrie Miller. Yesterday was tax day, but the IRS had problems accepting electronic filings and direct payments from taxpayers. Don't worry. The IRS says today is now tax day. Later in the hour, we'll go in depth into taxes and personal finance planning for 2018. But first, let's talk mergers and acquisitions, deals. Financiers are burning the midnight oil, working on the biggest merger and acquisition wave in almost two decades. So what's driving the flurry of deals? Will the deal-making make consumers and entrepreneurs worse off or not? What about employees? Now, before we bring our guests into the discussion, we want to hear from you. Do you work at a company that's making an acquisition or being bought? Tell us about your experience. Also, as a customer, are you worried that reducing competition will lead to higher prices? Call me at 651-227-6000, toll free, that's 800-242-2828. Online, you can tweet to me at CFarrellEcon, that's at CFarrellEcon. My guest is Lena Kahn. She's Director of Legal Policy with the Open Markets Institute, formerly the Open Markets Program at New America. She researches antitrust law and competition policy. Welcome.
Good to be here.
So let's just start with the basics. I mean, what do you see driving the surge of deal making that's been going on?
So there are a bunch of factors to consider, but one that seems quite obvious is the huge tax cut that corporations received. And the big tax overhaul that Congress passed last year, the corporate tax rate has been dropped from 35% to 21%. So that's a lot more cash that companies now have to play with, and a lot of them, it seems, are going to be using that to go around and acquire other companies. So I think, you know, the effect of the tax cut that companies received is something that's definitely playing into this big time.
And is this also a drive for consolidation to become bigger, to become heftier in an industry, or do you see a lot of the deals are sort of in one company buying another company in a different industry?
I think it's a combination of both. It really depends on the sector. In agriculture, we're waiting to see whether a big merger between Bayer and Monsanto gets approved. So that would, you know, involve a lot of overlap between these two companies. There are other areas where, you know, Amazon, Google, for example, are going out and buying up all these AI companies because that's an area that they're looking to expand into.
Right, the artificial intelligence.
Exactly. So I think we're seeing a combination of existing dominant players looking to expand their dominance within their current sector and instances of dominant players looking to buy up smaller players in other industries so that they can gain a foothold in new industries.
That's a little more speculative, but do you think the talk of trade wars and some of the anti-globalization tone that's coming out of the Trump administration, is that affecting this desire to make deals now?
It could be a part of it, though. I think the tax cuts is something that's a lot more tangible and a lot more concrete and on the table. And I think on trade, like with so many other issues, at any given moment, you can be trying to read different signs from the White House. So, you know, on the one hand, you could see the White House moving in more protectionist directions, but then the next day you could see news reports that President Trump has asked his advisors to look into reviving the TPP negotiations potentially. And so, you know, that would be a move away from protectionism. So I think on trade, companies are still really waiting to see how things are going to shake out and whether, you know, the trade war approach is really going to be neutered by a big deal like the TPP. So I think there's still uncertainty there in a way that on the tax front, we already know that the companies have a big pile of cash
So on this, in this area of mergers and acquisitions, this week we have really a fascinating case because you have the executives from AT&T and Time Warner, and they're going to take the witness stand to defend their proposed $85 billion combination. And as you know, the U.S. antitrust enforcers, they're trying to block this deal. So are we starting to see renewed interest in antitrust law?
It's possible we could be seeing that. I mean, in the last few years, there's been a pretty dramatic shift in terms of public awareness and public coverage of the fact that industry after industry in the United States has become highly consolidated. And this is not just something that happened overnight. It's been a pattern that's been continuing for the last three decades. And it traces back to a really significant policy shift that the Reagan administration put in place starting in the early 80s that basically just adopted a much more permissive approach towards mergers and then also basically, you know, let the antitrust tools kind of sit unused for many decades. And so, you know, in sector after sector, we see a handful of companies dominate, be it in airlines and in hospitals and rental cars and in food and agriculture. And that's starting to have negative effects. You know, we're seeing the effects at the level of consumer prices. We're seeing the effects at the level of wages. We're seeing potential effects at the level of innovation and investment that companies are putting forward. And so I think as public awareness of this problem has grown, enforcers are also now potentially thinking that, hey, you know, we need to start using antitrust more tools more aggressively. And so the Justice Department's decision to block the AT&T Time Warner merger was quite significant because this is actually a deal that is what's known as a vertical merger. So it's a deal between two companies that are not necessarily in head-to-head competition. So it's not, say, American Airlines buying up Delta. It's a little different than that because AT&T is the pipes. You know, AT&T is what distributes the content, and Time Warner is the content. And see, these are vertical mergers that in the last few decades, the government has really taken a very permissive approach towards. They really haven't blocked them. But with this merger, I think there was a big recognition that this is a deal that could have a lot of ramifications. It would concentrate a lot of power. It would give this one entity a lot of power to shape news and content, and so the government chose to block it. You know, whether they succeed in that in court is still an open question, but I think the fact that they chose to block it definitely sent a sign to the business community that, you know, antitrust officials are going to be looking at deals more closely.
Okay, I have a follow-up question to this, but before I do, just want to say, are you concerned about the pace of deals? Well, tell us why. Call me at 651-227-6000. Or toll-free 800-242-2828. So this AT&T Time Warner merger and the government taking this position on what you've called the vertical combinations, is there sort of a rethinking about where to put the emphasis on antitrust? Because as you say, for a long period of time, my sense is as you mentioned, hands off. And as long as prices aren't going up very much, you know, why should the regulators get involved in this whole area?
Exactly. So I think there is a potential rethinking of whether short-term price effects are really the only main factor that enforcers should be looking at. And I think this is for a few reasons. One is that there now have been some really good retrospective studies that look at what has happened as a result of mergers that the government approved. And we actually find that prices routinely do increase. So that's suggesting that the government, in fact, is not a great predictor of whether prices will increase, because even when they've allowed mergers that they said wouldn't lead to price increases, we've seen price increases. I think the other thing that's happening is that we're seeing forms of anti-competitive behavior that are not necessarily resulting in higher prices. And part of that is because of the tech platforms, right? So Google, Facebook, Amazon, these are companies that, you know, are not known for hiking prices. Google and Facebook, in fact, don't charge users money in a traditional sense, right? They're really charging us our data. That's what they're collecting. And so I think the way in which competition is working in some of the tech sector is also prompting people to rethink whether prices is really the only thing to think about.
Yes, and there's also seems to be a growing literature, or at least a growing speculation, that one of the reasons why entrepreneurship may be down in the United States, entrepreneurship measured as, you know, forming a company with employees to grow that business, maybe because of these very large tech companies. And if somebody has a good idea and starts doing okay, they get snapped up, and which is great for the founders, but may not be as healthy for the overall system.
Right. I mean, I think there are a couple of dynamics. One is what you just mentioned, that a company is actually able to scale and then gets acquired. But I think the other issue is, you know, whether an entrepreneur really has a fair shot of entering the market in the first place. My colleagues and I at the Open Markets Group a few years ago did a study looking at the rate of entrepreneurship. And we found that on a per capita basis, there's actually been a 50% decline between the late 70s and the present, which means that on a per capita basis, you know, half as many Americans are starting their own business. This is troubling for a variety of reasons. You know, one is it means that our markets are potentially less competitive. But I think it's important to remember that having and growing your own business and passing that business on to your family was also a traditional mechanism for asset building for the middle class. This is something that's especially true in immigrant communities. So I think, you know, the idea that it's becoming much more difficult to have your own business and the effect that that's going to be having on things like, you know, wealth inequality, whether, you know, a local community feels like it still has control over its local economy. I think these are really these are factors that are important to consider.
Well, let's take a call, and it's from Joe. And Joe, you're in Sioux Falls?
Correct.
What's your comment or question?
Well, so my comment is, with a lot of my clients, I've been seeing them stockpiling more and more cash. And I believe that there's actually going to be more acquisitions if there's a market downturn, just because so many large companies are sitting on record piles of liquid assets that when things get a little cheaper in a market downturn, you'll see a lot of competitors being bought up.
And you said your clients. So what is your business?
I'm a mergers and acquisitions attorney.
Ah, so are you busy these days?
I am very busy.
And you expect you'll be even busier once we have this downturn?
For the larger clients, it's going to be hard on smaller clients, but I think you'll see a lot of the national companies, international companies, publicly traded companies buying up smaller competitors because they're just sitting on so much cash right now.
So, Lena, what do you think? What do you think about Joe's observation?
That makes a lot of sense to me and kind of chimes with what I've been hearing. I think there are going to be two issues that will be interesting to consider. One is what happens when, as Joe mentioned, that, you know, there are these foreign companies that are looking to acquire American companies. So there's actually a review board called CFIUS within the Treasury Department that oversees kind of deals that they think could pose national security concerns. And in the last year or two, there have been a few deals with China, with Chinese companies, that this office has actually blocked. We also saw that with Qualcomm, Broadcom recently, where, you know, the executive said, actually, this deal should be blocked because there are national security concerns.
Right, and Qualcomm is the giant.
Whether that will continue happening is going to be interesting.
And Qualcomm is the giant chip maker.
Exactly.
Right. So here's one of my puzzlements. And, you know, a lot of mergers and acquisitions going on. Joe's talking about there probably could be more when there's a downturn. But when you look at the academic research over a long period of time, it's fairly consistent. A majority of these deals don't work out. They're not really that good if you're measuring that in terms of improving the business, making the business more competitive.
I think that's right. And I think, you know, we're starting to see a new wave of empirical research that's really looking to study closely what the effects of these deals are, you know, not just on factors like consumer prices, but on factors like wages, on wealth inequality, on innovation, on investment. You know, I think there's a really serious question to be asked about whether all of the consolidation that we're seeing, you know, what that means for the trajectory of innovation, because oftentimes dominant companies don't really have an incentive to introduce the product that's going to, you know, disrupt their own industry. So there's the famous example of Kodak having sat on the digital camera for years and years because it didn't want to introduce this new product. So I think we need to be thinking about, you know, analogous threats in our current economy where you similarly see a lot of incumbents dominate sector after sector.
So how do you measure too much consolidation? Because the standard refrain in the 80s and the 90s and, you know, up till now has been, look, maybe you have a big bigger position in the United States, but we're in this global economy. And in the global economy, I don't have that big a market share. So I need to get bigger because I'm competing in a global economy, not just in the U.S. domestic market.
That's definitely what we hear, from big companies. But, I mean, when the antitrust agencies do merger analysis, they're still looking at U.S. shares for the most part. I mean, they're looking at what is the relevant market and how are these companies competing. I think also in terms of, the day-to-day reality that Americans face when dealing with, monopolistic companies, oftentimes that's experienced at the local level, right? So if nationally or even globally, your cable company is competing with other firms, but locally, you really only have one choice, be it Comcast or some other company, that national or global competition is really meaningless for you if you're having to deal with, overnight price hikes or really shoddy customer service. So I think we need to think about, what is the experience of people on a day-to-day sense when dealing with these big companies.
So you probably remember back when on the United Airlines flight and the doctor was dragged off the plane and people were outraged and I'm not going to fly on United. I'm going to, go on another airline. And people ran into this reality about there are four airlines, 80% of the flights, and there wasn't a whole lot of choice. And for a moment, you had this sort of flurry of we need to do something about that. And then it's kind of faded into the background. So, do you really see this moving up in the level of importance in Congress and in the Justice Department and among the regulators?
I think we could see it continue to get a lot of political traction. So in the last few months in the House of Representatives, some members started what's called the Antitrust Caucus. So that's a forum for members to talk about monopoly issues. I think we're seeing members on both sides of the aisle talk about monopoly issues. Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, but also Mark Rubio, Ted Cruz. So there's a bipartisan concern about competition and consolidation issues. We're also seeing some local candidates run campaigns for 2018 on anti-monopoly issues. So I think, we could potentially continue to see that in 2020. So when the Democrats released their big Better Deal platform last summer, one of the key issues was antitrust and, rehabilitating antitrust as a key pillar of their economic agenda going forward. So I think we've seen a bunch of signs that suggest that this will be an issue that continues to gain political traction going forward.
So one last question. It's well known when there's a merger acquisition, typically workers lose their jobs. There are layoffs. I mean, that's part of the process. But what about wages? Mergers and acquisitions, consolidation, is that one of the reasons why we're seeing such anemic wage gains?
That's an excellent question, and it's something that we've seen a bunch of research on in the last few months. And what this research has found is that, in fact, labor markets are quite concentrated, which means that oftentimes a worker with a particular set of skills really doesn't have all that many options when thinking about which employer to work for. And that lack of competition has meant that wages have, stagnated or stayed depressed, and that this has eaten into wages anywhere from 10 to 20%. So I think the effect of consolidation on kind of keeping wages down is a really key factor that could explain, in part the levels of soaring wealth inequality that we've seen, that, the consolidation at the corporate level is really feeding into inequality and wealth inequality, and, wages and the effects on wages is a big part of that.
Well, thank you very much. We're going to be continuing to follow this merger wave. I think it's just absolutely fascinating, and see what happens in Washington, D.C. But thanks for taking your time.
Thanks for having me.
Lena Khan is Director of Legal Policy with the Open Markets Institute.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Kerri at KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.